I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome back to Radio Times. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg doesn't like Donald Trump and has been very public about her opinions recently. She told the New York Times, "I can't imagine what the country would be with Donald Trump as our president." She told CNN, "Trump is a faker with no consistency who's gotten away with not turning over his tax returns." And when the AP asked her response to a Trump presidential victory, she responded, "I don't want to think about that possibility." Well, Donald Trump called her comments a disgrace and tweeted, "Justice Ginsburg has embarrassed all by making very dumb political statements about me. Her mind is shot. Resign." And then this morning, Justice Ginsburg issued this statement, "Upon reflection, my recent remarks in response to press inquiries were ill-advised, and I regret making them. Judges should avoid commenting on a candidate for public office. In the future, I will be more circumspect." Well, the show must go on. We are going to continue the show that we set up yesterday afternoon to talk about what Justice Ginsburg said. And joining us are Mark Joseph Stern, writes for Slate, covers law and LGBT issues. And nice to have you with us on Radio Times by Skype.
Thanks so much for having me on. I apologize for any poor audio quality that comes over my Skype connection.
Well, we will keep our fingers crossed, and if we have to, we'll throw you on a phone. Let me get Arthur Hellman to join the conversation as well. He's a law professor at the University of Pittsburgh, where he focuses on issues of federal judicial ethics. And Arthur Hellman, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
It's a pleasure to be here, Marty.
And also with us is Noah Feldman, professor of constitutional and international law at Harvard University and a columnist at Bloomberg View, author of six books, including most recently Cool War, The Future of Global Competition. Noah Feldman, it's been a couple of years. Nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
My pleasure to be with you.
Mark, let me begin with you. You wrote a whole piece about what Justice Ginsburg said and perhaps why she said it. Now that she has issued this statement this morning, can she take it back?
No, I don't think so. I mean, she's clearly attempting to sort of unilaterally de-escalate. My suspicion is that she spent the last few days talking to her confidants, perhaps her children, maybe even her colleagues on the bench, and decided that this was an unwise move and she wants to put the cat back in the bag. But it's not going to happen. She said what she said. It's on the record. And I think that the damage has been done. The damage will continue to be done as Donald Trump uses this in his campaign to allege that the current Supreme Court is very, very liberal and political, and that he must become president so that he can appoint more true conservatives and replace Justice Ginsburg.
Mark, I'm going to ask you to get in the head of Justice Ginsburg. Why do you think she said it, though?
Why did she apologize?
No, no, no. Why did she say those critical comments of Donald Trump?
Well, you know, I think it's very telling that she's never said anything negative before about a previous presidential candidate. She didn't bash John McCain. She didn't bash Mitt Romney. And so I think she thinks that Trump is different. He poses a unique menace to the Republic, in her view. And I think she believes that to remain silent in the face of this unprecedented danger would be akin to legitimizing his candidacy. She refuses to let that happen. She knew the risks going in, and she decided it was worth tarnishing her good standing in order to speak her mind and speak out against this great looming evil.
Let me turn to you, Arthur Hellman. Was Justice Ginsburg right or wrong when she spoke of her critical comments of Donald Trump?
Well, she was wrong to utter those comments. You quoted her her comments this morning. Judges should avoid commenting on a candidate for public office. You know, Justice Ginsburg has been a federal judge for almost 40 years, and I don't believe that she suddenly discovered that it is wrong for judges to do the sort of thing she did. So I think she knew it. I think Mark's analysis may be right, that she saw a danger to the Republic, but it strikes me as rather egotistical of her to think that she had to step in and do something, that this would change the situation. And I agree with Mark that she has tarnished both her reputation and the stature and legitimacy of the judiciary. And ironically, she has actually validated much of what Trump has been saying.
Noah, let me get you in on the conversation. You have a different perspective on Justice Ginsburg's critical comments.
My view from the beginning was that there's nothing unconstitutional about justices having political views and expressing them, and that indeed, in my view, we all know that the justices aren't monks and nuns and priests, and we understand that they have political perspectives, and that no great harm was done either to Justice Ginsburg or to the court here. And I think that's still the case. You know, Justice Ginsburg's apology suggests to me perhaps that she simply didn't want to provide more ammunition for Trump himself. And she may have been a little bit inexperienced in wading into political waters like this. If you take on a populist in this way, the populist can sometimes turn it against you. And I suspect that she judged that, and that's why she's issued this apology.
But
fundamentally, I don't think any great harm occurred here, not to Justice Ginsburg's reputation and not to the courts. And I also think that if indeed Donald Trump is not elected, people will look on Ginsburg's efforts as probably historically brave in the face of his candidacy.
She did say, I'm putting this to you, Noah, judges should avoid commenting on a candidate for public office. Do you agree with her on that?
Well, as a prudential matter, yes. I mean, I think there's no good can come of it. And in this case, probably relatively little good did come of it. I think she initially thought that this was a unique situation, that Trump was not just an ordinary candidate. And, of course, she had not spoken out against previous Republican candidates for president in the past. I think she thought this was extraordinary and that Trump is an outlier with respect to the threat he poses to the country. And she certainly spoke that way.
Well, let me pick up on that. And Arthur Hellman, go back to you that, I mean, again, we're getting in the head of Justice Ginsburg, which is obviously not fair for you and not fair for her. But if a member of the U.S. Supreme Court feels that a candidate is a threat to the country and to the Constitution, do they have the right and perhaps responsibility to speak out against that person?
I don't think they have the right or the responsibility. Their right is to serve as a justice. If Justice Ginsburg really believes, as Noah is suggesting, that Donald Trump is a unique threat to the Republic, and she may believe that, and I think there are many people who do that, there's something she can do. She can resign and join the political process, work through the political process to see that he's not elected. There are actually some sort of precedents for that. Almost a century ago, a justice named John Clark resigned from the court because, as I recall, he thought that the world court was needed to save the world from another world war. That was shortly after World War I. And he thought that was so important that it was worth giving up his position on the court to campaign for United States participation in and endorsement of the world court. So if Justice Ginsburg thinks it's so important to the Republic, it's important enough that after, 20-whatever years on the Supreme Court, she could resign and take part in the political process.
Let me go back to you, Mark. I believe you and certainly others have raised this as well, which is if the 2016 election ends up like the 2000 election, like Bush v. Gore, and the U.S. Supreme Court has to weigh in. Of course, we're only talking about eight justices, but if the Supreme Court has to weigh in on who wins the 2016 election, has Justice Ginsburg, in a sense, hurt herself and maybe disqualified herself?
Well, you know, the justices decide for themselves whether they will recuse on any given case. There's no rule book that could force Justice Ginsburg to recuse, but I think there would be immense pressure on her to not hear that case, and I think it would be understandable and probably right for her to recuse and refuse to hear that case, because she has proved that she cannot rule impartially, and she has proved that any ruling she does render will not be seen is impartial. It will be seen as a political ruling from the start. And so I do think it's a real concern for people who think this election could be quite close, that if there is a Trump v. Clinton case that goes up to the court, we may have to see Justice Ginsburg recusing herself for that and leaving the court with four strong conservatives and only three liberals.
And your Skype line is not the best, but we will hang in there. But Noah, let me go to you and put that scenario before you. How do you think Justice Ginsburg would or should behave under that scenario?
Well, first, we should notice that this is a very unlikely scenario. Bush v. Gore happened just once. We all very much hope that such a scenario would not arise again in the future. Under those circumstances, those very unusual and unlikely circumstances, her personal comments about Trump might indeed put her under a lot of pressure to recuse herself. And my guess is that now, given that she's apologized, she probably would recuse herself. However, if Trump were to be elected president, I do not think she would or should recuse herself from matters involving the executive branch, because those would not involve Trump personally, but would involve the government of the United States.
Hmm. Let me go back to you, Arthur Hellman, and I wonder whether we know, for instance, Justice Ginsburg, it looks like she's pro-choice. One can see from some of the rulings and some of her commentary from the bench where she stands on particular issues. Should it be any surprise to us where she stands on Donald Trump?
No, it shouldn't be a surprise. And by the way, I first want to express agreement with Mark that she almost certainly would have to recuse. I'll just point out that it's not quite up. It's up to her in the sense that, you know, nobody can appeal from her decision. But the code of conduct, the recusal statute, the disqualification statute, unlike the code of conduct, does apply to Supreme Court justices. And it says that a judge or justice must recuse when his or her impartiality might reasonably be questioned. And I think that would certainly be true here. But nobody should be surprised about Justice Ginsburg's views. And I think what Noah said a few minutes ago, that judges have these views, that should not come as a surprise either, when judges aren't naive folks who, many of them, in fact, have come from the political sphere. But I think there's a difference between having views on policy or political issues and making them public. And I think judges keeping his or her views private is an important part of the process and contributes to the legitimacy of what the judges do.
Well, we're almost having a break here. Noah, let me toss this to you. I mean, certainly it seems that the justices past and in the recent, present and in the recent past have given speeches. It seems like they have been more outspoken about their opinions about particular issues.
There's been a slight loosening, and I think that's probably been a good thing. I think part of that is the realization by the justices that even after a decision like Bush v. Gore, there was no major consequence to the court's sense of public legitimacy. And I think the justices think it's important for the public to know that they are human beings and that they make decisions under ordinary human pressures and circumstances.
And that's Noah Feldman. He's a professor of constitutional and international law at Harvard University. Also with us, Arthur Hellman, law professor at the University of Pittsburgh, and Mark Joseph Stern, who writes for Slate, covers the law for Slate.com. And we are talking about what Ruth Bader Ginsburg said about Donald Trump this morning. She issued an apology saying that she should have been more circumspect and will be in the future. And we want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen, and we are talking about what Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg said this week, beginning the week with some highly critical comments of Donald Trump. Donald Trump tweeted that her mind was shot and that she should resign. And then earlier this morning, she said that her comments were ill-advised. She regrets making them. And in the future, she will be more circumspect, also adding judges should avoid commenting on a candidate for public office. We are talking about all of this with our guests, Mark Joseph Stern, Arthur Hellman, and Noah Feldman. And you can join the conversation by calling us at 1-888-477-9499. Mark, let me go back to you. And I posted this yesterday on our Facebook page, had a lively conversation back and forth, people leaving all sorts of comments about what Justice Ginsburg did and certainly the response of Donald Trump. And one of the criticisms of Justice Scalia was that he went on a duck hunting trip with Vice President Cheney, did not recuse himself in a case involving executive privilege, saying that there's some comparison here. Can you flesh that out for us?
Well, yeah, so what Justice Scalia did was definitely inappropriate. He went duck hunting with Vice President Dick Cheney while his case was pending before the court. But at the same time, I think it's worth recognizing that the court and the federal government are both very insular worlds. And everyone tends to know each other. A lot of them are friends. People on different sides of the political spectrum are friends. And so I think that what Scalia did may have been inappropriate, but it doesn't rise to the level of what Justice Ginsburg did, which was essentially to mount a campaign in a consecutive interviews against a presidential candidate. I think just her intent there is so clear and her method so blatant that it really does cross a line and becomes far worse than what Justice Scalia did back in 2004.
There was a commentary that I think it was in her interview with the Associated Press was asked about a reference that led her to say something about the next woman president. Obviously embedded in that was the idea that Hillary Clinton would be the next woman president. Is that too far, the idea of in a sense promoting someone to be the president of the United States?
Well, there is a rule in the Code of Judicial Conduct, which the justices are not technically bound by, but which they ought to follow voluntarily, that says that judges shouldn't endorse candidates for office.
Right.
And, you know, I don't think she was doing that there. An argument could be made that by criticizing Donald Trump, she was effectively endorsing Hillary Clinton. That's probably why she's taken these steps to back away. But I think the really fascinating and significant question here is why a sitting justice with many years of experience would on three separate occasions self-consciously mount this kind of criticism. And I think it's difficult to answer that without thinking that she really believed that this was a unique and particular circumstance. I would add with respect to Justice Scalia that in my view there was nothing wrong with his trip, and he subsequently issued a defense of himself where he somewhat famously said that he was not in the same duck blind as Dick Cheney, which was Scalia's form of humor.
Right.
Scalia and Ginsburg had a real friendship before Justice Scalia died, and I think she's channeling him to some degree. She's saying, look, you know, I'm going to be an independent person. I'm 83 years old, and I'm going to make my own decisions. So I think that's an important factor here.
Arthur, has she hurt the court, the Supreme Court?
In the long run, probably not. I think she's probably limited the damage by her apology, and people have short memories these days with things happen so fast and each new event erases the others from public memory. So in the long run, I think it probably does not, but it sets a bad precedent. And I think, I do think that if we all hope there won't be a replay of Bush v. Gore as Trump v. Clinton, she'd have to sit that out. I think she would. I agree that if Trump does become president, she's not obliged to sit out cases involving his policies, but there would be a question mark hanging over them. If there were a policy comparable to the immigration or health care policies of the current president.
Mark, let me go to you. And do you think this is actually picking up on something that Arthur said earlier? Do you think by her critical comments that she ended up helping the person that she seems to dislike so much, Donald Trump?
Yeah, I think so. I think she miscalculated. You know, she clearly thought that Trump is an unprecedented evil and that she had to speak out or else risk legitimizing his candidacy. But, you know, it's a mismatched fight. Ginsburg can only really say a few things through interviews unless she wants to breach protocol altogether. And so what we now see is Trump lashing out, pushing back in his very Trumpian way, hurling insults, creating a true political feud and dragging Ginsburg and by extension the court into it. I think his followers and his supporters are thrilled about this. I think this is the fight they've always wanted against the liberal folk hero justice. And I think that if anything, this will rally his base to the polls in November because they want to get Ginsburg off the bench and replace her with one of their guys.
Noah, what if Justice Alito had said that Hillary Clinton was a liar and unfit to be president?
Well, I think the criticism would have been comparable to what we've had now. It probably would have been even more intense, considering that many of the editorial pages that criticized Ginsburg are in fact liberal editorial pages, and I guess that they would have come down as hard or probably much harder on Alito. I myself, however, would like to believe that I would have said exactly as I'm saying now, that it's within his capacity to do so, and that we're not shocked by what his beliefs in fact are. I think it's really important to bend over backwards to try to be even-handed in a case like this. And I think the liberal organizations that have criticized Ruth Ginsburg have been bending over backwards. And I think it would have been important to do the same, you know, under other circumstances for those who would defend the justice.
Arthur, Justice Ginsburg was also critical of the Senate for not at least holding hearings on Judge Garland for the U.S. Supreme Court. Was that too far? Did she go too far on that particular issue?
I think she probably shouldn't have said it. I mean, that's a much closer question. That's not supporting or endorsing a candidate for public office. But I think that same canon says that judges aren't supposed to enter the take part in the political process, and the confirmation process for a Supreme Court justice in particular is a very political process. The other thing about that is that she is asking the Senate to act on the confirmation of somebody who would be sitting on the same court with her, somebody who would be sharing the bench and who presumably would be, in fact, she really said this almost in so many words, another vote for her side. So I think for that reason, it is improper, and she shouldn't have said that either.
What do you think, Noah?
You know, it's not unprecedented at all for the justices to weigh in before Congress with respect to things that are relevant to the court. And an undermanned court with only 8 justices that's stuck making some 4-4 tie decisions, which is exactly where we are here, affects the capacity of the court to operate. So I think it was not inappropriate at all for her to urge a vote. And then she said, quite obviously and correctly, that she'd be more likely to be on the 5 side than the 4 side if Garland were confirmed. But that's just a fact. And I think it would be odd to criticize her for acknowledging it. Again, it would require us to be in this game of myths where we think that the justices should never say things that all 300 million of us know to be true.
And we are talking about Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the notorious RBG, what she said earlier this week, criticizing Donald Trump. This morning, she did issue a statement saying that her comments were ill-advised and she regretted them. Talking with Noah Feldman, professor of constitutional and international law at Harvard University, Arthur Hellman, law professor at the University of Pittsburgh, and Mark Joseph Stern, who writes for Slate.com. A lot of people want to join the conversation. Let me read some comments here. A tweet from Rich who says, are we saying that justices are not allowed their freedom of speech? They can do their job and have their own views. Do you want to take that, Mark? Do they have the same speech rights as the rest of us?
I should say in the court's decision last term in the Williams-Yulee case, the majority held that no, in fact, a judicial ethics rule may be applied constitutionally to judges in order to prevent them from saying things that everybody else might be able to say, judges and judicial candidates in elections. But, you know, I think it's wrong to look at this as a free speech issue. Everybody knows that the Supremes are the Supremes, they have to say what they want. We aren't sending cops to Justice Ginsburg's apartment to arrest her for saying what she said, just criticizing her. And so I think it's fair game to criticize her. And I think it's important, especially for those of us on the left, as I am, to hold our people to the same standard that we hold the other side. And to me, I just don't see the point in having an Article III judiciary that is supposed to be independent, it is supposed to be above the political fray and not engage in the kind of political debates that the other two branches are consumed by. What is the point of having that if when there's a really nasty candidate, we give it all up and say, hey, go for it, justices. Enter the political fray all you want. Just doesn't.
And you know what? We're going to throw you on a phone or something. I feel like our Skype connection is not the greatest, and I want to make sure, Mark, that we hear every word as opposed to every other word. Let me read a couple of more comments. Dave said she had nothing to apologize for. She didn't say anything that isn't true. A comment from Teresa, we're an overly apologetic nation. Comment from Lynn, I'm pretty sure Justice Alito never apologized for his remark about President Obama. I guess saying you're wrong. A tweet from Ivy, do guests have opinions Justice Thomas's wife being a Republican lobbyist. Is that an issue, Arthur Hellman, the idea that a justice's wife could be a lobbyist?
Yeah, I think it is troubling. There's no perfect solution to that. We live in an era of where you have two professional couple, both of whom have professional positions, and Washington is full of such couples. It's hard to know where the line should be drawn, how much independence the spouse of a judge or justice should be given. I think the view today is that each individual is an independent person, and if we believe that, then that would suggest that the spouse of a judge mm-hmm. should be able to live out his or her life in the way she thinks appropriate.
No, let me put to you the question about whether justices have the same or have free speech rights. How do you wrestle with that, or do you?
Well, as a legal matter, they certainly have free speech rights. There's no question about that. The question is simply, what is the right judgment for them to offer in these circumstances? For myself, I disagree with Justice Thomas almost all the time, and I've written in Bloomberg View in defense of his wife's job as a lobbyist. I think that's completely fine. I think we do have an obligation to recognize that each member of a couple is a separate person, and even though, of course, they speak to each other and may indeed influence each other, the reality is that you can't hold one person to the standards of the other under these circumstances. And most of all, it doesn't come as a shock that Justice Thomas spends time with people who are political conservatives. We all know that, and indeed one of them is his wife. Justice Thomas's views are well understood by all of us, and he's expressed them many times in writing and as well in public. So, you know, I hope this story will die down now, and mm-hmm. we can get beyond the kind of, to my mind, slightly childish worry that certain magic words have been spoken that should never be spoken. I think that's a mistaken way to think about politics, and it's a mistaken way to think about judging.
But are you saying we have a naive view of the Supreme Court?
Well, I actually don't think we're that naive. I think that ordinary people understand perfectly well and accurately that the justices, especially in close cases, are affected by politics and are affected by their morals and are affected by, indeed, their partisan views. We all know what happened in Bush v. Gore. What I think is naive is the tendency among people in our businesses, and I mean law professors, and I mean journalists, and I mean people who think and speak about the court, to pretend in a slightly, if I may say so, sanctimonious way that we know exactly how a justice should speak and under what circumstances they ought to speak. And I think that's the naive bit, to say, well, we all know what they think, but let's reassure the public, the naive public, that the justices are totally objective, when the public is not that naive and doesn't think so.
Let me get some callers, and we've got Julie from Allentown joining us on Radio Times. Hi, Julie. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
The statement that Ruth Bader Ginsburg made, I'm curious as to why some people are saying it's an apology. I did not hear the word "I'm sorry" or "I apologize." I heard "ill-advised" and "I regret." And I just wonder if it's semantics that I'm not understanding, or why people are saying it's an apology when I heard no apology or sorry in that statement.
You're right. She didn't say apologize, and she didn't say sorry. She did say ill-advised. I regret making them. I will be more circumspect. Arthur Hellman, is that an apology from your perspective?
Well, the caller has a very good point. It is not an apology, and I think she knows how to apologize, and she didn't. I think she came as close as possible to apologizing without doing it. That said, as I suggested before, there is something disingenuous about it, because this suggests that it happened all inadvertently, as some of the examples, by the way, that have been cited before were inadvertent spur-of-the-moment things, like Justice Alito's mouthing "not so" or whatever it was at the State of the Union address. This was very, very deliberate. So, no, it's not actually an apology, but I suppose if people start thinking of it that way, it will become one in the public mind.
No, I read in preparation for the show and remember Sandra Day O'Connor saying, this goes back to 2000, saying about Al Gore and the Florida primary, the idea that he had won the Florida primary, quote, "this is terrible." Now, my understanding from Jeffrey Toobin, this was at a cocktail party, but is that equivalent?
Well, it wasn't the primary, of course. It was the election.
Of course, the election. How silly of me. Yes.
No, not at all. But it's we can all remember that time with some horror. You know, I think that was a spontaneous utterance at a cocktail party. I think that Justice O'Connor regretted saying it subsequently, and although this is pure speculation, my guess is it may have had something to do with her desire to remain on the court subsequently. When she considered briefly retirement and then, of course, did indeed retire. But that falls under the category of, you know, spontaneous utterance, you know, something said in a quasi-public setting at a cocktail party, which was not thought through. In this case, whatever Justice Ginsburg thought when she spoke to Adam Liptak in the first interview, whatever she may have intended, in her two subsequent interviews, there's no question that she intended this. Mm-hmm. She was doubling down on her position. And she is a tough person, and it's remarkable to me that she would back away from it at all, even with a rather cautious statement like her statement of regret.
And you're saying that's not an apology either?
Well, you know, I think apology is a term that is very much in the eye of the beholder. Right. You know, if I say that I regret my actions, that's a form of apology without any question, but it's not,
it's a hard word to say.
Full apology. Yeah, it's not a full apology.
Well, let's take another short break. We'll get back to our conversation. Looks like we have Mark Joseph Stern back with us as well. And he covers the law for Slate.com. The voice you just heard is Noah Feldman. And he's a professor of constitutional and international law at Harvard University, also a columnist at Bloomberg View. Arthur Hellman rounding out our trio of guests. And he's a law professor at the University of Pittsburgh. And we are talking about what Ruth Bader Ginsburg has been saying all during the week, criticizing Donald Trump, although this morning she did say that her comments were ill-advised and she regrets making them. Nonetheless, a lot to talk about when it comes to what Supreme Court justices can and can't say, and raising a whole host of questions about how we run our government, I guess. I don't know how else to say that. 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen. On Tuesday, House Speaker Paul Ryan sharply criticized Justice Ginsburg while talking with CNN's Jake Tapper.
I find it very peculiar, and I think it's out of place for an appointed branch of government. That shows bias to me. Now, those of us who are in the elected branch of government who get elected to things, I think that it's perfectly in the realm. But for someone on the Supreme Court who is going to be calling balls and strikes in the future based upon whatever the next president in Congress does, that strikes me as inherently biased and out of the realm. I think that's something that she should not have done, because I don't think that that shows that she intends on being impartial in the future.
Mark, you want to respond to that? Again, has she hurt herself, perhaps in the eyes of the House Speaker?
Yes. Well, first, I have to thank your amazing producers for getting me on a real line. So I hope you can hear my voice in every word instead of every other word.
Exactly. No, go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, you know, I have to say, I think she has really sort of disqualified herself from, a Trump v. Clinton case. But more than that, I think if Trump were to assume the presidency, she would probably have to recuse from every case that involved his administration. And even further, like Paul Ryan said, it's a peculiar thing for a sitting Article III judge to say. As I said or was attempting to say earlier, I don't see the point of having an Article III judiciary, which is supposed to be independent and above the political branches, if when faced with a really nasty threat, the independence falls away and the judges stop calling balls and strikes and start just picking sides and launching a campaign in the press against their disfavored candidates.
Well, Arthur, just to sort of add to the complexity, of course, we know that Donald Trump raised questions about the nationality of Judge Curiel, who's deciding about the Trump University case, just to sort of add to the complexity of what we've been talking about.
Yes, that's part of the irony of this whole thing. When Trump made that comment about Judge Curiel, he was widely criticized. I was one of the people who criticized him for it. I said that Trump misunderstood the role of the judge, which is to put aside his or her personal predilections and origins and everything else and decide the case on the basis of the law. Well, now it looks as if Justice Ginsburg has given force to Trump's comment. It makes Trump's comment look much more plausible if judges are not the impartial arbiters that many of us were saying, then Trump has a reason to be skeptical about the impartiality of a judge who he said was of, quote, Mexican origin, obviously, and had, I also think because he was had been appointed by President Obama. Well, Justice Ginsburg's comments make that concern about Judge Curiel's impartiality much more plausible. Now, I don't think that's just a myth. I work with judges, and we have many of their papers from prior years. Sure, they have their predilections, but I think most of them really try to decide the cases on the basis of the law and a view of the law, which, of course, is influenced by their backgrounds. Right. But still, they do try, and I think we should not encourage people to think that law is just politics by another name or carried out by people with robes.
Noah, do you want to weigh in on this?
Well, not particularly.
Does that mean no comment, or you want to think first?
No, I don't think that I'm not sure that we're getting to the heart of the matter, which is that the justices remain humans who are engage in processes that they sometimes care very deeply about. And that's just a crucial part of their psychological makeup. I think that's really the point that we keep on walking away from and that I would like to bring us back to.
Yeah, but I mean, the question is how if they are expressing what they really feel, how far can they go, Noah, in expressing their opinions about something or opinions about a person like a Donald Trump?
Well, they can go as far as they choose. In my own view is that as a prudential matter, they should avoid situations where they're going to be, you know, raked in over the coals by the public, and especially when dealing with a populist like Donald Trump, who's very clever. I mean, there, I think the strongest argument against what Justice Ginsburg did is that she sort of walked into a fight with a populist, and the populist is going typically to win that fight. He's less constrained than she is, and he's got more experience, and he's done rather well at this. It's not as though she's the first person to have criticized him. He loves this sort of confrontation, and his supporters seem to enjoy it, too.
Let me read an email from Seamus who says, if a member of our judiciary here in Pennsylvania made similar comments about a political candidate, he or she would be up in front of the Court of Judicial Discipline. Now, you're across the state here, Arthur Hellman, in Pittsburgh, and we know a lot about what's been happening with our judicial system here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. You want to weigh in on that?
Well, I have to say I'm not as familiar with the state rules as I am with the federal. But state rules are different because the states don't necessarily have the same separation of politics and the courts as the federal system does. For example, here in Pennsylvania, the judges are elected. Justices are elected. They run on party lines. I think there was actually a case fairly recently challenged. There is a rule.
Yeah.
The caller is right. There is a rule that the judges are not supposed to take part in that kind of part in political processes. But I think there was a recent case challenging that rule. So it's, I think it's an open question whether judges can engage, state judges can engage in that kind of politicking.
Mark, we have a couple of comments here from folks who are saying, is Justice Ginsburg being held to a higher standard? Do you think she is?
Well, perhaps she is. And I have to say there's a lot of hypocrisy here, especially on the right, when their guys were doing things like criticizing Al Gore, as Justice O'Connor did, or going duck hunting with Dick Cheney, as Justice Scalia did. They were conspicuously silent, and yet now everyone is up in arms on the right, from Paul Ryan and Donald Trump on down, about what Justice Ginsburg has done. So, yes, I think there's hypocrisy. She is being held to a higher standard.
But, you know, I don't think that liberals and fans of Justice Ginsburg should lower their own standards just because the other side does it, too. The question here is this a precedent we want to set? Right. Would we be okay, as you asked earlier, if Justice Alito came out and said Hillary Clinton is a liar and a faker, and why isn't she releasing her emails? You know, if it's a higher standard, it's still the correct standard, and it's one that I think people on the left should really hold their favored justices to if they want to maintain an independent Article III judiciary.
Noah, do you want to weigh in on that?
You know, the need for fairness on all sides is, I think, absolutely right. We do need to be consistent. But I think at the same time that we're consistent, we should recognize that there's a tendency, especially on people, by people who are not in the cut and thrust of the judicial world, to sit in judgment of the judges and to demand that they stick to some unrealistic standard. And I think we need to ask ourselves, is that standard good for democracy, and is that standard good for the judiciary? And in my view, it isn't. And the reason that it isn't is that we don't want justices who are isolated. We actually want justices who care about the world, who know about the world, and are connected to the world, because we want them to make the right judgments, and that requires connection.
And that requires opinion, it sounds like you're saying as well.
It absolutely requires opinion. It's not as though there's, I mean, you know, this came through in Paul Ryan's comment about the balls and strikes. The justices are not umpires. They do not call balls and strikes. That is not an objective job. Interpreting the Constitution requires moral judgment in difficult cases. And we want justices who can do that, and who can do that in a contextualized way. When Justice Sonia Sotomayor, as she's done repeatedly this term, draws attention to the Black Lives Matter movement and draws attention to the dangers to African Americans and other people of color in their confrontations with police, we should applaud that, because she is showing awareness of the real world. And we want that in our justices. And all that Justice Ginsburg was doing here was being perhaps a little more explicit than she ought to have been about those actual views. And we ought to be forgiving of that and not sit in judgment of her.
What do you think, Arthur Hillman?
I disagree with almost all of that. I think one example from the past comes to mind. Earl Warren in 1968 was appalled at the prospect that Richard Nixon would become president. In fact, he announced his retirement in the hope that President Johnson would appoint his successor. It didn't work out that way. But much as he loathed Nixon, much as he thought Nixon would be a terrible president, he never said anything publicly. He remained silent. And I think that tradition has served us well, that, of course, the judges and justices have these views, but the traditional rule, I think, also serves. We've been talking about the kind of the external purpose that it serves with respect to the public view, but I also think it has an internal purpose of a kind of self-discipline. When a judge or justice acts upon the precept that I will keep my political and policy views to myself, I think it helps that judge to keep his views out of his decisions as much as humanly possible. You know, I think it is not unrealistic to say that most judges try to do their job in accordance with the law and not to impose their policy preferences.
Let me get some more comments on the air. Mark, I'll put this to you. This is a tweet from DeNova. RBG back down was a mere formality. Message received. Trump win changes court long time. That is something that actually that she did say. That's obviously a political interpretation, and in many ways, that's exactly what Justice Ginsburg said.
Yes, that's exactly right. And I think that was probably the most indefensible part of what she said. You know, her criticisms of Trump's character may have been out of line for reasons I named earlier, but, you know, they were criticisms of his character, of his temperament. She didn't say, oh, he was too conservative for me. You know, he has these views I don't like. She mostly just said he's unfit to be president. But her statements about the court itself, what he would do to the court, that seems really odd to me. I mean, he has named his shortlist for the Supreme Court already, and they are well-respected, if very conservative, judges. So is she simply saying there that she doesn't want the court to be stacked with more conservative justices? That seems even more inappropriate, arguably, than to say that Donald Trump isn't fit to be president. I mean, that's the way the court works. No one can deny that. It's not unique or unprecedented. And so I think that, in a sense, was one of her most political statements in all of the interviews.
I'd be curious to know what you say back to what Mark just said.
Well, I guess we don't see eye to eye about the question of how the justices relate to the real world and specifically to political disputes within the real world. I don't share Mark's view that we should be the police of the justices to assure that they maintain some facade of pure neutrality. I don't think we want that. I think if one supports progressive values, as Mark says that he does, he ought to applaud justices being aware of and connected to the real world and not subscribe to the rather unrealistic, to put it mildly and to put it generously, myth that the justices are somehow entirely outside of the cut and thrust of real-world politics. They never were. They're not now. Bush v. Gore shows that they're not. And the only adult response to that is to acknowledge it and to press for justices whom we like and with whom we agree. And I think most Americans understand that on the right and the left, we understand that politics is directly relevant here. We understand there's a political fight about the confirmation of the next justice. We understand that a lot of the next presidential election will determine the future of the court going forward. And we're not served by pretending otherwise and by sitting in judgment of justices and saying, well, how dare they express this view that everyone understands, that they already understand. That's not responsible politics, in my view.
I'm looking at the clock here. Mark, let me go back to you and look into 2016, whoever the president is. How many potential vacancies do you think there will be on the Supreme Court in the first 4 years of whoever the next president is?
Well, unless the lame duck Senate snaps into action, they'll have one right off the bat, right?
Right.
To replace Justice Scalia. And then Justice Ginsburg is 83. I think that she will try to stay on should Trump be elected, but I doubt that she would be eager to stay 4 years, and, you know, health problems could intervene, although she remains as healthy and sharp as ever today. You know, Justice Kennedy is 80. Justice Breyer is 78. These guys don't want to stay on the bench forever, and I think it's quite conceivable that the next president could have 2, 3, maybe even 4 appointments waiting for him or her.
And to you, Arthur Hellman, whoever the president is, I mean, that's a lot of justices, to put it mildly.
It is indeed, and it could change the court for a generation and more. I mean, the likelihood is that we could have a predominantly liberal court for the first time since the end of the Warren Court. And given some of the innovations of this supposedly conservative court, it's hard to imagine where that might take us.
Noah, about 30 seconds here. Is this whole thing been a tempest in a teapot, or is it something more than that?
Well, it's important for us to have discussion about these important issues. But yeah, I think it is a tempest in a teapot in that Justice Ginsburg's view is already understood and well-known by everybody. What really matters is the next election. We had 12 years of Republican presidents. Then we had 8 of a Democrat, 8 of a Republican. Now we've had 8 of a Democrat. If we have another Democratic president, that will indeed, as Arthur says, change the complexion of the court going forward.
Well, on that note, my thanks to all three of you. Thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times. I learned a lot. Noah Feldman, thanks a lot.
My pleasure.
And he's a professor of constitutional and international law at Harvard University. Arthur Hellman, thank you very much as well.
Thank you, Marty. It's been a pleasure.
A pleasure for us. And he's a law professor at the University of Pittsburgh. And Mark Joseph Stern, we were determined to keep you on the air. Thanks so much for joining us on Radio Times.
Thanks so much. I was honored.
He covers law for Slate.com. I laugh because we were jumping back and forth between Skype and between our phone lines to keep him on the air. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times and you can find out much more about the program. You can download a podcast of the show, find us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. And we did post a couple of comments yesterday. You can carry on this conversation. I'm Marty Moscone. Thank you so much for joining us for today's Radio Times.